Welcome, listeners, to the Disability News Program on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thank you for tuning in. I'm John Curry, your volunteer reader. In today's program, we'll include an article from Block Club Chicago about the City of Chicago's plan to add 1,700 accessible crosswalk signals to help blind and visually impaired people pursuant to a court order. We'll hear a piece about a new PBS detective series centering on an autistic character in a lead role. There'll be an article from Time looking into what can go wrong with AI if inclusivity is not built into the design. And we'll hear a couple of pieces about some ways the federal government's current agenda adversely affects people with disabilities. We'll begin, though, with a few upcoming events from Ability 360 here in Phoenix. Family Movie Night for Parents with Disabilities. Parents with Disabilities Family Movie Night. Ability 360 presents Parents with Disabilities Movie Night. On June 20th, bring your family and friends for a free showing of Lilo and Stitch. Dinner, popcorn, and drinks are provided. This event will start at 6 p.m. The movie starts at 6:30 p.m. Hosted at Harkins Tempe Marketplace. Address, 2000 East Rio Salado Parkway, Suite 1160 in Tempe. The event is free for all participants. You are encouraged to bring friends and family. Space is limited, so sign up today. You can sign up at the Ability 360 website. Indoor pickleball. Indoor pickleball class. It's a big deal. Come out and join Ability 360 with indoor pickleball classes. Starting June 4th, join in on the fastest growing sport in the United States at Ability 360 Sports and Fitness Center. No experience, no problem. Ability 360 will provide the equipment, experience, and sports chairs as needed. Time? Wednesdays, June 4th through July 30th, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. The location? Sports and Fitness Center courts. Cost? Sports and fitness members are free. $5 for non-sports and fitness members. Mind, body, and soul classes. Be at ease with your mind, body, and soul at Ability 360. What is mind, body, and soul? Mind, body, and soul is dedicated to providing you with complete peace of mind, relaxation of body, and rejuvenation of the soul. Time? Wednesdays, June 4th through July 30th. Note, there's no class on June 16th, 2025. These classes are held at the Sports and Fitness Center Group Fitness Room. Again, you can sign up at the Ability 360 website. Learn to lap swim class. Looking to improve your swim technique and build confidence in the lap lane? This new class is for adults who know basic water safety, independence in the water, and want to learn proper stroke form for lap swimming as a cardio workout. The class aims to make lap swimming more accessible, less intimidating, and easier to incorporate into your routine. The classes run through September. Basic water safety is required. The focus is on stroke technique and cardio fitness. The classes are held weekly on Tuesday at 11 a.m., and they started June 3rd. And they're held at the Abilities 360's Sports and Fitness Center. And now from Big Block Chicago, city must add 1,700 crosswalk signals to help blind, visually impaired people under judge's order. The plan is in response to a class action lawsuit filed in 2019. It requires the city to install more than 1,700 specialized signals over the next 10 years. This article was by Alex V. Hernandez, published June 4, 2025, Chicago. A federal judge's order outlines how the City of Chicago will install more than 1,700 accessible pedestrian signals over the next decade. The plan is in response to a class action lawsuit filed in 2019 by the American Council of the Blind of Metropolitan Chicago and a group of people with vision-related disabilities. The decision should send a strong message to communities around Illinois and across the country that the safety of all pedestrians, including those who are blind or visually impaired, must be taken into account, said Ray Campbell, president of the Illinois Council of the Blind. In March, U.S. District Court Judge LaShonda Hunt outlined a proposed plan for how the city could add more than 1,700 audible crosswalk signals over the next decade to help blind and visually impaired pedestrians safely cross city streets. The plan came after Hunt previously found that Chicago was liable for violating the Americans with Disabilities Act and Rehabilitation Act by failing to provide meaningful access to its network of pedestrian signals, according to court documents. Hunt finalized her plan May 28 after a period in which attorneys for the city and plaintiffs had a chance to propose revisions, according to court documents. The judge's plan now provides a roadmap for how city officials must retrofit thousands of existing signals that lack audio. City officials must equip at least 71% of Chicago's signalized intersections with accessible pedestrian signals over the next 10 years. The city will then have another 5 years to install accessible signals at all remaining signalized intersections, unless it can show that blind pedestrians already have meaningful access to the pedestrian grid, according to the order. The plan will also establish benchmarks for the minimum number of crosswalk signals that can be installed annually, a process for community members to request crosswalk signals at specific intersections, and a requirement to prioritize signal installation at the most dangerous intersections. A court-appointed independent monitor will oversee Chicago's compliance with the plan. The order also requires the city to create an Accessible Pedestrian Signal Citizen Advisory Committee that would include representatives from the Chicago Department of Transportation, members of the Mayor's Office for People with Disabilities, and Chicago's blind community on a quarterly basis to discuss the installation plan's progress, again, according to court documents. The city had 85 accessible pedestrian signals active at 2,800 intersections as of March. Such signals are designed to help visually impaired pedestrians by emitting a locator tone to help guide users to the signals button. Once the button is pressed, pedestrians are told to walk or not to walk. There would also be vibrating surfaces to help convey the signals. CDOT spokesperson Erica Schroeder previously said all new and in-progress signals meet those standards to ensure accessible pedestrian signals are available to the public. As outlined in the order, our plan for upcoming signal installation is currently under development. This prioritization will focus on, but is not limited to, intersections with outstanding public requests, locations near public transit and public facilities, and those with particularly dangerous conditions, Schroeder said. And the city will continue to scale up implementation in accordance with the court's order. Chicago officials have promised to install more accessible pedestrian signals since 2008, but continued to fall short of that goal, according to a 2023 statement from Campbell. U.S. District Judge Elaine E. Bucklow ruled in favor of Campbell and the other plaintiffs in 2023. More than 65,000 Chicagoans live with vision difficulties that can make it challenging to walk the city's streets, Bucklow said. They can't rely on the visual cues provided by traditional, i.e., non-APS, traffic signals, and crosswalks, Bucklow said. Next up is an article from Forbes entitled, Breaking Down Barriers for Entrepreneurs with a Disability by David Prosser, published June 5, 2025. What is holding back disabled entrepreneurs in the UK? New research suggests that while entrepreneurs with a disability are well represented among the UK's small business founders, many are struggling to build businesses of scale. Disabled entrepreneurs account for around a quarter of the UK's 5.45 million business owners, according to research produced for the government-backed Lilac Review. But these firms account for only 8.6% of small businesses' turnover. Disabled entrepreneurs are innovative, impactful, and growing, yet we remain underrepresented, underfunded, and underestimated, said Victoria Jenkins, who co-chaired the Lilac Review, an independent review commissioned by the British government to explore inequalities faced by disabled-led businesses. Jenkins, who is also the founder and CEO of fashion brand Unhidden, says entrepreneurs with disabilities are routinely turned down for funding and excluded from access to broader business support. We need a fundamental rethink of what opportunity should look like, she says. It's an important argument. The Lilac Review's research, carried out by academics at ARU Peterborough and the Small Business Britain Group, found that while 73% of disabled entrepreneurs were ambitious to boost their businesses' revenues, many faced significant barriers in doing so. Certainly, financing is a major issue. More than half the entrepreneurs taking part in the research said financial support would be their critical need for the coming year. But a recent Access to Finance study found that disabled business founders were 400 times less likely to secure investment than their non-disabled counterparts. More broadly, however, entrepreneurs with a disability face a range of other problems that other small business owners don't have to worry about. The ongoing costs of managing a disability are often significant, while many entrepreneurs worry that increasing their business's income will lead to them losing essential state benefits. Difficult health conditions can also limit productivity. Indeed, research from the charity Scope puts the additional disability price tag faced by the average entrepreneur at more than £1,000, that's $1,357 per month. Supporting small business founders with a disability is important from the perspective of societal equality, but also represents a major economic opportunity, the Lilac Review concludes. It believes that removing the problems currently holding disabled entrepreneurs could unlock £230 billion, $312 billion, of benefits for the UK. Sarah Berthon, founder of Excel Against the Odds, a small business that supports people with chronic illnesses in the workplace, agrees. Disabled entrepreneurs face many challenges and obstacles as they set up and grow their business. Yet, the rewards can be far-reaching, she says. As a business owner living with multiple chronic illnesses, I have experienced many difficulties. But running a business is a wonderful experience. It is good for my well-being and provides me with a true sense of purpose. Haley Kellard, the founder of greeting card and stationery firm Dotty About Braille, points to plans for the launch of the UK's first dedicated incubator and research center for disabled entrepreneurs, the Lilac Center, as particularly important. Kellard, who, like Berthon, served on the Lilac Review's steering committee, says, the whole process shows just how much can be achieved in a relatively short space of time when people are committed passionate, and focused on making a real difference. Other initiatives prompted by the inquiry include the launch of the Disability Finance Code, a new code of best practice co-developed with UK Finance, the British Business Bank, and small business investors. The code aims to break down the barriers faced by many disabled entrepreneurs seeking finance for their small business. The LILAC Review has also issued a series of recommendations, including calls for the UK government to ensure its new business growth service is fully accessible and to open up public procurement exercises to disabled entrepreneurs. Financial services businesses, such as banks, need to do more, the review says, particularly to develop flexible lending products, to improve financial literacy support, and to ensure investment processes are more accessible. The findings of this report are clear. Change is needed, not later, but now, adds Jenkins. That means inclusive finance, accessible business support, and communities that empower rather than exclude. For its part, the UK government has pledged to respond positively. Small Business Minister Gareth Thomas, who co-chaired the review, says, "This government is committed to delivering further and faster economic growth. A key part of this is ensuring that those with the ambition to start and scale up a business have the right support to do so, no matter their background or circumstances." And now from Bloomberg, disability bias audits in limbo as Trump seeks DOL offices end. Published June 4, 2025, written by Rebecca Klar. A budget proposal to transfer the responsibility of policing federal contractors for disability bias from a nearly defunct Labor Department office to the EEOC would leave enforcement gaps as the commission lacks explicit authority to audit companies for now. The DOL's fiscal year 2026 budget justification released May 30 would eliminate the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs and rehouse enforcement of Section 503 of the Rehabilitation Act within the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The proposal, part of President Donald Trump's dismantling of the OFCCP, will have to reconcile the contrasting enforcement powers of the two agencies. Whereas the OFCCP was structured for proactive reviews to mitigate employment bias, the EEOC's charge-driven system largely doesn't permit investigations until workers come forward. I understand if you don't want two agencies to have similar functions, but it's not the same function. And the notion that giving Section 503 to the EEOC means merging two of the same functions is not true, said Larry Lorber, Labor and Employment Counsel at Seyfarth Shaw LLP and former OFCCP director. Both agencies enforce anti-discrimination laws protecting disabled workers. The EEOC uses the 1990 Americans with Disabilities Act, passed roughly 17 years after the OFCCP received Section 503 authority. The ADA requires workers to file charges alleging discrimination with the EEOC or state agencies. Section 503 allows federal contractors' workers to file complaints, but also requires businesses with significant federal contracts to take affirmative action to employ and promote qualified individuals with disabilities. Specific requirements for affirmative action plans and the power to audit them, though, are not included in Section 503's texts. They were established through rulemaking, which may not survive an interagency transfer of authority. John Fox, a partner at Fox, Wang, and Morgan PC, said he believes it's unlikely the EEOC will keep in place regulations to conduct further audits or establish requirements for affirmative action plans. Those will be history, he said. Congressional action. Congress will likely need to act to shift the enforcement authority to the EEOC. If Trump's budget is approved, Congress would have to reauthorize Section 503 since it grants enforcement explicitly to DOL as written, attorneys and former labor officials said. That's a very significant step still in the process. It seems to be a giant leap at this moment in time, said Lauren Hicks, a shareholder at Ogletree Deacons. The OFCCP's responsibilities requiring contractors to submit affirmative action plans or conduct audits for race and sex-based discrimination were eliminated when Trump previously rescinded decades-old Executive Order 11246. This left only Section 503, along with the Vietnam-era Veterans Readjustment Assistance Act, which the budget proposal seeks to move elsewhere in the DOL. Keeping affirmative action obligations under Section 503 in place is critical, since the ADA doesn't have the same auditing mechanisms to incentivize compliance, Hicks said. There's not as much of a proactive push to be detailed and thorough and robust in evaluating yourself and your programs and ensuring they are actually working successfully, she said. The OFCCP audited hundreds of companies annually. Roughly 2,000 had been slated for OFCC evaluations this fiscal year, according to a Biden administration list. Although the EEOC lacks those audit powers, the agencies share information, and complaints at the OFCCP were sometimes considered dual-filed under the ADA. Both agencies accept complaints from workers, though the OFCCP is not structured to lean on them for enforcement. Obama-era rules added to Section 503 also set in place a utilization goal of 7% individuals with disabilities in contractors' affirmative action programs. It's unclear if the EEOC would keep that goal in place, as it has revoked support for diversity programs based on race and gender under its acting chair, Andrea Lucas. EEOC's scope. The EEOC deferred requests for comment on how it would handle Section 503 to the Office of Management and Budget, which did not respond. But if the EEOC should choose to pursue adoption of the OFCCP's auditing power alongside Section 503 authority, enforcement implications could be significant. If I was Andrea Lucas, I would almost be chomping at the bit to get 503 to now launch all these audits, get all this data, and see what else I can find, said David Cohen, founder and president of DCI Consulting. The EEOC could use that power to investigate diversity, equity, and inclusion programs by using hiring information gleaned during Section 503 audits to justify an expansion into an investigation under Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, Cohen said. The EEOC's budget justification document includes funding to fold in Section 503, but did not say which regulations it would adopt or modify in the process. Hicks said if the audit power is granted to EEOC, it would likely be initially limited to disability issues, but would open the door for a future administration to bring back requirements for race and sex-based affirmative action plans under EO 11246, using the EEOC for relevant enforcement. But the EEOC is less likely to adopt audit functions not mentioned in the Rehabilitation Act following the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Loper Bright Enterprises versus Raimondo, said Fox. The 2024 decision overturned the requirement that judges defer to agencies where statutes are silent or ambiguous. The EEOC does have directed investigation power to review companies for potential discrimination without a charge filed, but it is limited to the Age Discrimination in Employment Act and the Equal Pay Act. Despite differences in the agency's investigatory approaches, the transfer of duties seems like a pretty natural add-on, said Victoria Lipnick, a partner at Resolution Economics and former acting EEOC chair. We'll have to see if there's any kind of regulatory development in terms of a similar kind of proactive analysis. I think that remains to be seen, Lipnick said, adding that disability law expertise is in the EEOC's wheelhouse. This next article is from the Disability Scoop. It's entitled PBS Series to Center on Autism by Sean Heasley, published June 10, 2025. A new drama focusing on a character with autism who has a unique way of solving crimes is coming to television. The British series Patients finds Patience Evans working in the criminal records office in the city of York, when a detective notices her extraordinary attention to detail, Patience starts helping with complex criminal investigations. Patience is played by Ella Maisie Purvis, an actress who is neurodiverse. The show, which will air on PBS, is based on the French hit Astrid. The English version debuted on Channel 4 in the UK earlier this year. Patience brings a fresh perspective to PBS audiences, and our viewers will be captivated by this journey, said Maria Bruno Ruiz, Vice President of Program Content Strategy and Scheduling at PBS. Patience, an autistic character played by a neurodiverse actress, shows us new ways of seeing the world and making connections. Patience premieres Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on PBS. Well, in contrast to the program we just heard about, here's an article entitled Most TV Characters with Disabilities Played by Those Without by Sean Heasley, published June 6, 2025. The vast majority of characters with disabilities on television are played by typically developing actors, according to a new report, which finds little has changed in the last decade. Only 21% of characters with disabilities in streaming, broadcast, and cable shows between 2016 and 2023 were portrayed by actors with the same or similar conditions. The findings come from an analysis of 350 scripted television shows that was released recently by the Ruderman Family Foundation, which advocates for disability inclusion in Hollywood, and the Gina Davis Institute, a nonprofit that promotes on-screen diversity. While representation of actors with disabilities varied during the time period studied, the report found no meaningful improvement over time. These findings reveal two stark realities. Firstly, that the data underscores the underrepresentation of individuals with disabilities on television, despite one in four Americans having a disability. And secondly, that progress toward this goal has stagnated in recent years, said Jay Ruderman, president of the Ruderman Family Foundation. Overall, characters with disabilities remain dramatically underrepresented on television, the analysis found. Across the 8 years studied, those with disabilities accounted for just 3.9% of characters, and they were slightly more common on streaming services versus cable and broadcast shows. The report recommends that the television industry adopt authentic casting practices, make accessibility the norm on sets, and support projects written and performed by people with disabilities, among other steps. The narratives presented on screen greatly influence societal perceptions and understanding of inclusion, Ruderman said. We urge writers, producers, and decision makers to take note of our recommendations and commit to authentic representation without hesitation. And now a reminder that this is the Disability News Program on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm John Curry, your volunteer reader. Our next article comes from Time. It's entitled, When AI Erased My Disability. It was published June 6, 2025 by Jessica Smith. Jessica Smith is a Paralympian and disability accessibility consultant. I love AI. It's a powerful tool with incredible potential to revolutionize the way we communicate, create, and connect. From improving accessibility for people with disabilities, to helping businesses work smarter, to unlocking new forms of creativity, AI is reshaping what's possible across every industry. Recently, however, when I experimented with asking AI to generate images of me, I was in for a rude awakening. AI could generate a polished professional look of me or even transport me to a sunny vacation, but there was one glaring omission. The AI gave me two arms instead of one. I was born without my left arm. Growing up, I faced challenges that many couldn't imagine, but I also discovered a strength and resilience that became central to who I am. I went on to represent Australia as a Paralympic swimmer, and today I advocate for the rights of people with disabilities. My story is not about overcoming my disability, but about embracing it as an integral part of my identity. It shapes my perspective and fuels my passion for shaping a world where all forms of diversity are seen and valued. When I request an AI-generated image, I want it to reflect all of me, including my disability. My disability is not something to hide or fix. It is a part of my identity, my strength, and my story. Until technology understands this, there is still work to be done. AI bias occurs when artificial intelligence systems produce prejudiced or unfair outcomes due to biased data, flawed algorithms, or a lack of diverse representation in their design. When technology fails to include the full spectrum of human diversity, it risks perpetuating stereotypes and deepening societal divides. One notable example of AI bias occurred with facial recognition technology, which was found to misidentify individuals with darker skin tones at disproportionately higher rates. In 2018, a study by MIT Media Lab revealed that commercial AI systems had error rates of up to 34% for darker-skinned women, compared to just 1% for lighter-skinned men. This stark disparity highlighted how a lack of diverse data and representation in AI development can lead to harmful and biased outcomes. My story is just one example of how disabled voices can be erased when inclusivity isn't built into the design. It's not just about me, it's about the broader narrative of disability being left out of the picture, literally and figuratively. AI has the potential to break down barriers and enhance accessibility, but only if diversity and inclusion are built into its core. This requires involving disabled people, not as an afterthought, but as key contributors to innovation. What saddened me most was realizing how much potential we had to change the narrative from the very beginning. Yet, AI is merely holding up a mirror to our current society, reflecting back its biases. Ironically, my initial fear of AI was that it would be too intelligent or too specific. But now, I find that specificity is exactly what I want. I don't want generalized experiences or interactions. I want AI to be tailored to me. I decided to ask AI to generate an image with explicit prompts to include my disability. But even then, it seemed too difficult for AI to simply reflect who I am in its images. We have an opportunity to change this narrative. While AI is still being developed and refined, now is the time to build it through the lens of diversity and disability. This is a pivotal moment where we can alter the trajectory of deeply entrenched social constructs. It is an extraordinary and exciting prospect, but only if we act now. Imagine if AI-generated images depicted people using a wheelchair, a prosthesis, or with any other visible indication of disability, without needing to be asked. Imagine if AI gave everyone that option by default. How incredible would it be if we could train AI to challenge social perceptions of disability, not by request, but by design? The bias emerges because we assume everyone wants to improve their image, and disability isn't seen as an option because it is always viewed as less than. Disability is not a problem to be solved, but a perspective to be valued. By embedding lived experience into the design process, AI can move beyond simply reflecting societal norms to actively reshaping them, creating a world where everyone is seen, heard, and represented authentically. AI shouldn't just reflect our society, it should help shape a more inclusive one. The result is not just better technology, but a more equitable society where innovation serves all. Next up, Trump budget calls for major changes to disability programs by Michelle Diament, published June 5, 2025 in the Disability Scoop. The Trump administration wants to eliminate the nation's university centers on developmental disabilities and rethink the way Individuals with Disabilities Education Act programs are funded. But a new budget proposal spares some disability programs that were expected to be on the chopping block. In a 1,224-page blueprint and accompanying documents from federal agencies, the White House is offering a more detailed look at the president's budget request for the fiscal year that begins in October. The administration released a budget summary in early May, calling for Congress to cut non-defense discretionary spending by 22.6% and slash the federal budget by $163 billion. That document lacked specifics, but it fueled concern among disability advocates who were already on alert after a widely circulated budget document was leaked from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services that outlined plans to zero out funding for protection and advocacy agencies, state councils on developmental disabilities, the Lifespan Respite Program, university centers for excellence in developmental disabilities, and other programs people with disabilities rely on. Now, advocates say that the documents show the administration intends to retain funding for the Developmental Disabilities Councils, the developmental disabilities programs at protection and advocacy agencies, the Lifespan Respite Program, as well as the National Institute on Disability, Independent Living, and Rehabilitation Research. Those programs will move together from the Administration for Community Living, which is being shuttered, to HHS's Administration for Children, Families, and Communities, according to the plan. At the same time, however, the administration wants to end funding for other disability programs, including University Centers for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities and a program at protection and advocacy agencies that helps ensure people with disabilities have access to voting. Most alarming is the proposed elimination of funding for University Centers for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities, which provide critical services, research, training, and advocacy for people with developmental disabilities and their families, said Kristen Roth, Chief Marketing Officer at the Autism Society of America. Known as UCEDDs, the centers have existed in every state for more than 60 years and provide everything from early intervention programs and autism evaluations to training on developmental disabilities for families, self-advocates, and professionals in the community. The elimination of UCEDDs from the DD network is yet another example of the administration's aggressive attack on higher education institutions and people with disabilities, and it is clear that the Secretary of Health and Human Services and the administration do not understand our work, said Lily Hagel, Senior Policy Advisor at the Association of University Centers on Disabilities. The budget proposal also includes major changes to IDEA. While funding for the program would be largely level, some pieces would be consolidated. Per the plan, preschool grants, as well as many activities currently overseen by the Department of Education's Office of Special Education under IDEA Part D, would instead be folded into grants that are distributed to states under Part B. This change would affect parent training and information centers, technical assistance centers, training for new special educators and general educators, assistive technology, and accessibility supports and more, according to Celine A. Almazan, legal director of the Council of Parents, Attorneys, and Advocates, or COPAA, a nonprofit that advocates for the rights of students with disabilities and their families. The effort is part of the administration's push to give more control over education to the states, but it would require Congress to modify IDEA, Almazan said, adding that her group opposes such changes. Megan Burke, a professor of special education at Vanderbilt University, said that giving states more authority over how IDEA funds are allocated has pros and cons. On the one hand, such a formula could help states tailor the funding to their specific needs, she said. On the flip side, it removes federal oversight for special education. For example, the move of parent training and information centers to states could create a conflict of interest. It could be hard for a center that would be state-funded under the draft budget to educate and empower families about their rights and, potentially, enact their safeguards. The shift toward state control and efforts to reorganize programs and limit funding at the federal level are worrisome, said Colin Killick, executive director at the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network. The president's proposed budget would be extremely harmful to people with disabilities, he said. These proposed moves will mean that many of the programs our lives rely on, programs that have literally saved our lives, will be made more politicized, less resourced, and less effective. Now, here's another piece from the Disability Scoop entitled, "New Disability Regulations for Airlines Won't Be Enforced," by Sean Heasley, published June 11, 2025. Federal officials are holding off on implementing new regulations that were hailed as the largest expansion of rights for airline passengers with disabilities in a generation. The U.S. Department of Transportation said this week that it will not enforce what's known as the wheelchair rule until at least August. The rule, which was finalized by the Biden administration in December, requires annual training for airline staff and contractors who help people with disabilities or who handle wheelchairs. In addition, the regulations impose stronger standards for how assistance must be provided, specifying that it be safe and dignified, and detail the steps airlines must take if a wheelchair is damaged or delayed. The rule also makes it an automatic violation of the Air Carrier Access Act if airlines damage or delay the return of a wheelchair or another assistive device. Initially, provisions of the rules were supposed to start taking effect in January, but earlier this year, the Trump administration delayed enforcement until at least March 20, citing the need to review the final rule to ensure that it is consistent with the law and administrative policies. Around the same time, several major U.S. airlines sued over the rule, alleging that the Transportation Department overstepped its authority. Now, federal officials are pushing back enforcement again. DOT is now providing notice that it will continue to exercise its enforcement discretion and not enforce the wheelchair rule before August 1, 2025, to allow additional time for the officials appointed or designated by the president to review the wheelchair rule to ensure that it is consistent with the law, including the requirements of the 2024 FAA Act and administration policies, and to consider the issues raised by a lawsuit filed recently to challenge certain provisions of the wheelchair rule, the Transportation Department said in a notice about the change. About 5.5 million Americans use wheelchairs, and one out of every 100 wheelchairs or scooters on domestic flights is damaged, delayed, or lost, according to data provided when the rule was finalized. And finally, efforts to roll back federal disability rights protections alarms advocates by Michelle Diament, June 9, 2025. The Trump administration is quietly working to fast-track changes to a key disability rights law by circumventing typical procedures, advocates are warning. The U.S. Department of Energy posted a notice last month announcing plans to rescind requirements under Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act that specify what standards newly constructed and altered buildings must meet in order to be considered accessible. The change would do away with a mandate that's been on the books for decades, advocates say, sowing widespread confusion. More than that, it's the way that the agency is going about the update that's setting off alarm bells. Typically, in order to modify regulations, federal agencies go through a process known as notice and comment, where the public is given notice, offered a period of time to comment, and then the agency considers any comments before issuing a final rule. Those steps can take years to complete. In this case, however, the Energy Department is using a far more expedited approach known as a direct final rule. As a result, the notice indicates that the changes will take effect July 15 unless significant adverse comments are received by next week. The move is highly unusual, according to Claudia Center, legal director at the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund. A direct final rule is supposed to be for something routine or non-controversial, she said. One example I've heard was changing the name of a department. I've never seen it before in my career, and most of my colleagues report the same. Center said she's concerned that if the Trump administration is successful, they could use this same approach to make other big changes. This action could be a trial balloon for other agencies, she said. There are more than 80 sets of Section 504 regulations across the federal government. This could be the first of many. If adopted, the change put forth by the Energy Department could affect thousands of buildings that receive federal funding from the agency, including those that are part of state and local governments, many universities, and other private entities, advocates say. Under existing regulations, facilities constructed or altered after June 13, 1980 that receive federal financial assistance must be readily accessible to and usable by handicapped persons. Buildings are considered to meet that standard if they comply with what are known as Uniform Federal Accessibility Standards. But now, the Energy Department is calling this requirement unnecessary and unduly burdensome. It is DOE's policy to give private entities flexibility to comply with the law in the manner they deem most efficient. One-size-fits-all rules are rarely the best option. Accordingly, DOE finds good reason to eliminate this regulatory provision, reads the agency's new rule. The Energy Department did not respond to questions from Disability Scoop about what prompted the changes and why the agency is using an expedited process to implement them. Amy Robertson, a civil rights attorney who specializes in disability rights litigation, said this is the first time in 57 years that a federal agency has tried to delete the building requirement, and doing so would yield significant consequences. This would inevitably lead to the construction of less accessible or even inaccessible facilities, she said. It would also create havoc for the entities that receive funding from the Department of Energy, as they would no longer have to follow the uniform federal accessibility standards, but would still be open to liability under general non-discrimination requirements. In addition, Robertson noted that many entities that receive funding from the Energy Department are also subject to the existing building standard under Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act, as well as regulations from other federal agencies. In comments that the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund plans to submit to the Energy Department, the group argues that the proposed rule is unlawful. The changes cannot be adopted as direct final rules, as they are neither routine nor non-controversial. Nor can the changes be adopted through ordinary rulemaking, according to the comments. The proposed rescissions contradict the foundational principles of Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act. Above and beyond the specifics of the regulatory change, advocates are leery that the Energy Department's rushed approach could set a dangerous precedent. The regulations implementing Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act are foundational to prohibiting discrimination against persons with disabilities in federally funded programs. Any changes to Section 504 should be approached cautiously and with extensive consideration and collaboration with impacted stakeholders, said Lydia Dawson, Vice President of Governmental Relations at the American Network of Community Options and Resources, or ANCOR, which represents disability service providers across the nation. Any rulemaking which implicates regulations fundamental to the rights of people with disabilities should be afforded the time and consideration necessary to protect against the potential for any unintended consequences which may infringe on those rights. The Energy Department is accepting comments through June 16. If significant adverse comments are received, notification will be published in the Federal Register before the effective date, either withdrawing the rule or issuing a new final rule which responds to significant adverse comments, the agency said in its notice. And that's the disability news for this time. Thanks for tuning in. I'm John Curry, your volunteer reader, and I hope you'll join us again next time.